Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Welcome to the Big O Show on the Overreaction Sports Network. Powered by Believe.
Still the same damn kid from Oklahoma. Same old dreams hanging off my shoulders. Wishing and waiting on a shooting star for all to see.
And now your host, straight out of Oklahoma, former Buffalo Bill, Jerry Ostrowski.
Welcome, welcome into the Big O Show. It is the 4th of July, folks. It is our great country's birthday. This is my favorite holiday of the year, right after Memorial Day. Huge 4th of July fan. I know Joe Miller is a huge 4th of July fan, as he is one of those guys that throws money into that empty pit known as a boat. So, Joe's heading to the lake later today. They're going to have a good time. We're going to hang out here. I got some family in town. My older boy and his fiance are in town. They're doing some wedding planning. But we're going to check out some fireworks tonight. And that is the one thing, Joe, I miss about the Northeast. I love 4th of July celebrations. And where I grew up in Pennsylvania, man, we had a huge one. And I do miss that down here with the parades and stuff. We don't quite have that in Oklahoma, but we do have some good fireworks. And of course, everybody likes to burn some stuff on a grill. So I'm excited about that. Joe, man, how are you doing?
Doing great. We are, so right now the boat is docked, the small boat harbor in Lake Erie. And yes, the 4th of July is my favorite holiday because I have a boat and this is the best summer holiday we get. So Memorial Day, hit or miss, Father's Day, hit or miss, Labor Day, hit or miss, but 4th of July is generally pretty good. So we are actually for the very first time going to go out on the lake. We'll be out there all day. And then when the sun goes down, we're going to anchor up and then just watch fireworks displays. Like, we're going to watch from the water to the land and kind of see what we can see. And not sure exactly where the best places to go are, but we're going to try to figure that out.
I do have to ask you this. Do you get that? See, lakes in this state are immense. Like, people, that's where everybody is at the lake this weekend. Most people. Mm-hmm. Not me, but most people. Do you guys, like, tie up next to people? Do you roll in with a bunch of other boats and people are going from boat to boat? Or are you that guy that kind of goes out there by himself and just kind of floats around alone with your thoughts and your family?
So this is a weird question. Well, not a weird question. It's a great question. I have a weird answer. So I grew up on Lime Lake, which is in the southern tier of Buffalo. So it's about an hour south of Buffalo in Cattaraugus County. A lot of friends, like my family's been there since 1967. So yes, we would tie up there. We'd anchor up and see people down in Otisega is the big bay where everybody kind of ties up down there. Bought my first boat just a couple of years ago. And we still more or less would take it to Lime Lake. However, I don't have any real boating friends on Lake Erie. So I don't have anybody to tie up with. And you don't really just like roll up and be like, hey, can I tie up with you? So right now we just bring people out with us. The girls bring their friends and we anchor out someplace across, you know, outside the break wall and 38, 40 feet of water and swim and drink high noons and eat potato chips and enjoy the day.
Well, you got to get a grill for your boat, man. Beth, I had a grill on my pontoon. You got to get a grill that it locks down on the railing. It's cool. But anyway, before we get into today's topic, which is the pass rush of the Buffalo Bills, props to Joe for setting up that new intro for the show. If you like the music, head to Spotify, head to Apple Music, Dax Perrier Band, the Dax Perrier Band, D-A-X Perrier, if you like that song. He's got a ton of good stuff out. Good friend of mine, independent songwriter, independent performer. and he would appreciate the support. So anyway, we're going to talk a little bit about the pass rush today of the Buffalo Bills, a panic topic by a lot of Bills Mafia and fans, especially our own John Fina, who is a little stressed about the defensive end situation. If you look at the sack totals from last year, Joe, our number one sack leader on the team, Leonard Floyd, is no longer with us. 10.5 sacks, followed by Ed Oliver at 9.5. A.J. Epenesa, 6.5, with Bernard, 6.5. And that's where I'm going to go today. And we'll talk a little bit about that as the show goes on. Greg Rousseau at 5. Then you had Daquan at 2.5. And, of course, Daquan was out with some injury last year. And then you also had, you know, Jordan Phillips, who's no longer with us, at 2.5. Dotson at 2.5, who's no longer with us. And then some others at 1. So when you look at this group and you look at this defense in general, one of the things you have to understand and realize about this defense, Joe, is I think that Sean McDermott and, of course, Bobby Babbage Jr., who is a McDermott disciple, there's no other way to put it, right? That's who he came into the game through, his father who worked for McDermott, and now he's the DC in Buffalo. They do like to, and of course, we all would like to have just pure pressure from the outside. I'm going to get into something in a second that I think is pretty cool. But I think this is a team that likes to get pressure from other areas, not only linebackers, but cornerbacks. And I think we'll see a little bit more of that this season.
Yeah. What's interesting to me is, you know, the Buffalo Bills. Well, the first surprising thing to me is that Ed Oliver had 9.5. And I think what the struggle that I have with sack numbers, and Dan Mitchell, who is a Bills content creator, one of the more popular ones, basically put out, hey, you know, on Twitter this week, hey, if Von Miller has 7 sacks, I'll be elated. And I was like, well, if Von Miller, you know, context, if Von Miller has 7 sacks that mean something, I'll be elated too. But it's 7 sacks in garbage time, or 4 of them or 5 of them are against teams that, you know, are trying to, you know, overcome a 30-point deficit to the Buffalo Bills, and they're just basically throwing on every down, and it's just garbage time, I won't be elated about that. Super surprised about the Ed Oliver 9.5. I did not expect that. Obviously, I don't live in the Bill stats like some people do. So when I saw 9.5, I was like, whoa. But I think the striking number from this is when you look at just the totals of sacks in general, 54 for this team from last year, and 20.5 of them are no longer on this football team, which that's a surmountable amount of pressure on the quarterback that they're going to have to create.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. And they went out and they draft Javon Solomon, 6'1", 246 from Troy, really did not address, so to speak, the defensive end position in the draft, picked up a couple of free agents. There's a few guys that are floating around on the team like Kingsley that have some ability. But this, I think, you know, we talked about this last week, or at least I did, when 3 questions going into the offseason. I think the onus of this pass rush this year, and we'll talk about some other things that they do, but really it falls upon Von Miller. Now, I was a little bit disappointed this week, Joe, in some of his comments about how he shouldn't have been playing, he shouldn't have been on the field. you know,
this is a hot topic for Spence and I. Von Miller's a liar. I don't mean that in a bad, like,
right,
certain people that we know about in
media. Yeah, please elaborate. Please elaborate.
OBJ is coming to Buffalo. Like, the amount of people that he's like, you know, and like, this is what he does. He loves the spotlight. He loves the attention. You know, I'll be back in 6 months. I will be back at 100% in 6 months. And then you come back not at 100%. You weren't even close to it the whole entire year. And then you come out a year later and you're like, I shouldn't even have been playing. Why are y'all mad at me? It's like, you set the expectation. You did.
And I'm going to set the expectation on Von Miller, and why, if he didn't feel he should be playing, he very easily could have walked into the corner office and said, I can't play. Okay. I can't play. Right. I've been around the greatest in the game. Okay. Yeah. The greatest in the game, Bruce Smith. And granted, sacks were not recorded in the early part of the NFL. So guys like Deacon Jones and those dudes are very, very argumentative that if they kept sack totals back then, that I would have been the sack leader and so forth and so on.
Right.
But when you look at this, Joe, this guy, I looked at this today. Do you realize that in the top 20 of sack leaders, and our own, Buffalo's own Bruce Smith leads the way, of course, with 200.
Correct.
Followed by Reggie White, Correct. The late Reggie White. God bless Reggie. At 198. Okay. Vaughn is the only active player in the NFL in the top 20 in sacks.
It's crazy.
He is sitting right now at 19th. He needs two sacks to surpass Dwight Freeney.
Wow.
If you look at that list, okay, if you look at that list, Joe, Vaughn's going to the Hall of Fame. This first is ballot. A Hall of Fame. Yeah, 20, top 20 Hall of Fame, okay?
5 years after, just like Bruce did, 5 years after he retires, he'll be autographing footballs, right. HOF, 5 years from when he retires.
Right, and when he walks in and says three words, he'll make about 35 grand a minute, right?
Exactly.
But it's like Vaughn is – he's only 15 sacks away from getting in the top 10. Mm. All right. I witnessed this. You know, this happened in Pittsburgh in a playoff game with the greatest of all time. He was sicker than a dog and could not play. Right. And he said, "Hey, I can't play today." That was it.
That was it.
All right. Let's figure out. Okay. Next guy. Let's go.
That's right.
You know what I'm saying? There was none of this. "Hey, man, are you sure? What do you think? Right. Hey, what do you think? I'll try." Bruce said, "I can't play it and play." Right. So don't sit there and tell me that like somebody forced you to play last year. I don't believe that at all.
I'm not sure he was saying he was inferring, alluding to, or even surmising that he was forced to play. I think it was in his mind. Dude, NFL athletes are cut from a different cloth in general, and even more so now than probably when you played. Maybe not. Or maybe there's levels of like the ones that are cut from a different cloth all the way down to normal humans, right? And there's like this ranging scale of people. I feel like he was more or less saying, "You got like I played when I shouldn't have been playing. You should be happy with that, right? I put myself out there when I wasn't ready to play, and now you're mad at me." I don't know that it was you know, the corner office guy being like, "You need to get on the football field or else." Like, I don't think that was it at all. I think he said, "I'm ready to go. I'm going to put myself out there and be on the field." And now he claims the fans are mad. Well, no, fans are mad at him. That we're more mad about the domestic stuff than we are. Right.
And believe me, that was brought up heavily about, you know, our girl Trish Savage is she's a truth teller.
Right.
So, you know, but I'm just saying, and you know, when you look at this situation, I was in this situation when I played, when I came back from my broken, when I had my tibial plateau fracture and came back and was playing at like 75%, didn't practice all week. The day that I had enough, me, Jerry O, cut three times, practice squad player, you know, like the 52nd and a half guy on a 53-man roster, right? When I said I was done in Atlanta, that was it. There was no questions. They were like, Dr. Marzo was like, "Yep, you're done." And that was the end of it. Right?
He's probably like, "I was waiting for you to show up." Right. Like, come tell me that.
"I was waiting for you to show up and tell me you were done. Thank you for doing that so I didn't have to make a decision for you." Right?
Right.
But it's like, Vaughn, top first ballot Hall of Famer, top 20 guy. If you don't want to play, all you got to do is walk to McDermott and go, "I'm out."
Yeah.
And that's it.
Not happening. And I think he did in the middle of the season. There was a time in the middle of the season where he was a scratch, a healthy, quote unquote, healthy scratch. And there was no real information about it. And it was like, "Oh, he needed to rest." And I think he did pull himself out potentially, or maybe the staff did. Maybe the staff was like, "You're not ready." Right. So who knows? But anyways, we might be right turned a little bit here. I don't even know.
No, I don't think we're right turned. I think that this is in line with what we're talking about today because I talked about it last week when we were talking about the three question marks. This is the single most important player on the roster this year. I truly believe that.
Yes, agreed.
I truly believe that. It's not Josh Allen. It's not Keon Coleman. It's not Khalil Shakir. It's not, it's not Christian Benford. It's not, it is Von Miller.
Yeah.
If Vaughn can come back to any sort of form, which if you saw some of the stuff he was doing individually, then last week they had the pass rush summit that he has every offseason. And he looks good to me. Mm-hmm. He looks fluid. He looks strong. He looks explosive. I watched him some on All 22 this week and was looking at some things. I think that as the season went on, he got more comfortable. Brian Baldinger, who played in the NFL, was kind of a journeyman. His brother played for a while as well. I was actually with him up in Kansas City. He was showing some things with Vaughn and said, "Hey, man, Bills fans, you need to chill. Vaughn will be back this year." I don't know if that's a vet helping a vet with some kind of campaign ad or whatever. I don't know. But what I do know is this. I expect him to be back. And like I said, he has some motivation, and that motivation is the number 15. And if you don't think that he doesn't see that or know that, he can probably recite to you the number of sacks of everybody in the top 20.
He probably can. Yeah, I'm looking at him right now, and I'm surprised by some of the names. Not surprised, but you know what I mean by surprised. Like, oh, like interesting. And then surprised.
Like, maybe dude, some guys. Give me a name.
Just that Terrell Suggs is 8. Like, I was surprised that Terrell Suggs is 8. That's a big number.
But what else goes along with the high sack totals, Joe?
Salary? Is that what you're asking me?
No. what goes along with high sack totals, too, is longevity.
Longevity, right.
And yeah, it's kind of what you're looking at with Vaughn. I mean, you know, Suggs was in the latter part of his career wasn't a double-digit sack getter every season, but he was consistent and he was out there. Right. Guys like Jared Allen, you know, we talked about Dwight Freeney earlier.
Kevin Green was a grandpa, I think, when he retired from football, right?
Kevin Green was a badass, Joe.
He went right from playing to coaching like the next year. Like, that's how old he was.
Kevin Green was a straight badass. Played against him multiple times. Played against him in Pittsburgh. Yeah. Played against him in Carolina. He was a badass. But looking at this team, okay, so we talked about our pass rush numbers. One thing I want to get into and kind of your theory on this is that another kind of a myth that we need to get out of our heads is that Greg Rousseau is not developing and that Greg Rousseau needs to get higher sack totals. Greg Rousseau had 5 sacks last year. Greg Rousseau is not a pure pass rush guy. Greg Rousseau, to me, is a 3-down defensive end that plays the run probably better than he plays the pass. And you're not going to put a team together where every defensive end is just a straight, you know, ears pinned back rush up field. You got to have guys that can play first and second down.
Right.
You got to have guys that can play third and short. So if you're thinking Rousseau's going to develop into this double-digit sack getter, I think you're a little bit mistaken. Mm. Thoughts on that?
No, I mean, when you look at the numbers, I mean, everything, it lines up with everything you just said. So as far as the sack numbers being at, 5, but his tackles for loss being at 13 speaks to the fact that he's setting that edge and he's in the backfield playing. He's just not pinning his ears back and running. I think it's a little concerning, though. There's an expectation when you draft an edge player, an edge rusher, an edge guy, you know, in the first round of any draft, there's an expectation that someday he's going to end up on that top 20 list of sack getters in his career. So to hear you say that Rousseau is never going to probably turn into that great sack getter dude brings a level of concern for me.
Well, see, it doesn't for me, because I think you have to have a big mix of abilities.
Yeah, but he's the guy. Like, when Vaughn's gone, it's Greg. Greg is the heir apparent.
Well, there's also 2,000 other defensive ends in the country that you can go get, right? And if you want a really, really interesting look into building a roster, and I know that some people, this show's kind of jumped the shark, but this year I think they've changed it up, and I really like the way they're going about it, and that's Hard Knocks.
Yeah, yeah.
The first episode of Hard Knocks with the Giants came out, and I texted you and John last night, kind of wild how incestual the front offices of the Panthers, the Bills, and the Giants are.
Is it? They all came from the Panthers.
Yeah, they're all freaking, it's like, it's wild. Like, you know, dudes are, oh yeah, we hung out all the time. We went to the beach. Our families are friends. Our kids are best friends. It's like,
right. Yeah.
So there's a very weird intertwined deal there. But, you know, they talk about, and they go in depth with their running back situation on this first episode. Mm-hmm. And the first thing they do is they're talking about, you know, is it worth either franchise tagging Saquon, giving Saquon this much money, or do we have this other big list of players that can give us running back ability without paying what we paid Saquon? Obviously, we all now know they didn't pay Saquon. He goes to the Eagles, and that incestual group of Panthers, Bills, Giants guys go find a dude on the streets that they're all very familiar with in Motor Singletary and sign him up there. But when I look at this team this year, A.J. Epinesa had 6.5 last year. A.J. is going to be a good pass rusher. A.J. is not going to be an elite pass rusher. Okay. Ed Oliver's turned into a witch inside. Why is Ed so good inside? Because the Bills do a really good job of getting him manned up on guards.
Right, right.
And that is an athletic mismatch.
That's Daquan. Okay? That's directly relative to Daquan Jones.
Yes, right? thank you for saying that, because that was the next point I was going to make. Daquan does such a good job of pushing the pocket. And the other guy that did a really good job of pushing the pocket is our guy that's no longer with us, is Jordan Phillips.
Jordan, yeah.
He kind of had that ability that Daquan has. So Ed is a witch one-on-one with a guard. So that's why he's doing what he's doing, and they do a good job of freeing him up. But when I look at this team, the three key pieces for our sack totals this year and sack pressure, okay, and it goes hand in hand with what we have going on with our starting cornerbacks, is Terrell Bernard, okay, it's Taron Johnson, and the X factor, again, besides Von Miller, is who's back? Matt Milano.
Yep.
Those three guys can wreak havoc. I mean, you look at Terrell Bernard. He had 6.5 sacks last year in his second year in the league, or was it his third year last year? Second year. Second year in the league. Tons of big splash plays. Became the middle linebacker that we did not have with Edmonds, because Edmonds was not a blitzer. Edmonds was not a pass rusher. Edmonds was a long middle linebacker that played great Tampa 2 coverage, see ball, get ball guy. He could run stuff down. He was not a point of attack guy. I don't care what Spence says. I'm just telling you what the film does and what the film tells me. And he was not that guy. So you get a slasher like Bernard, and then you add Milano that has that ability as well. And then you have Taron Johnson, who from the cornerback spot, you know, from PFF has a 79% rush grade, had one sack, one hit, and three hurries and just 5 attempts. So they will bring corner. They will bring corner pressure from time to time. And in this case, nickel corner pressure. He's that other guy.
That was muted. The 20% win rate on Taron Johnson, right?
Exactly. So when you look at this, those to me are the three guys that are going to bring pressure. I think they're going to get aggressive. Aggressive for McDermott. What is that? We don't really.
I think
you have a gauge on what aggressive for McDermott is, because he's not really a full out.
But you say that, but like last year with him taking over the defense, the defense looked markedly different than it did under Leslie Frazier. Leslie Frazier was not aggressive as far as that goes. Did he blitz at times? Yes, but he was more trust my guys, trust the scheme, trust the system, let them make a mistake. We saw McDermott under the same premise of philosophy defensively be far more aggressive last year than what Leslie Frazier was, meaning they still had all of the dudes that they wanted to roll at 40-50% snaps. So it wasn't like they were letting rolling Bruce out there for 95% of the defensive snaps and just letting him eat all game because he's an athletic freak. He's like fitter than any human on the planet. So this year is going to be completely different because they don't have the luxuries as much as we've talked about it. And you guys feel maybe they do. I don't. They had names on the roster, Puna Ford, Tim Settle, guys that they brought in as free agents to continue rolling. And they've done this over Vernon Butler. There's guys that they've done this with in the past that never panned out. Now they're asking dudes that don't have free agent signing names, whether they're rookies or just kind of guys that have been in the league. Kingsley Jonathan is one who has been somewhat effective, but is he going to be effective in a 40% role or a 35% role? I feel like they're going to have to be more aggressive. I feel like the defensive philosophy is going – I think Bobby Babich is a big part of that. I think you're going to see dudes coming from everywhere.
I hope you're right. I mean, I think I've got that much faith in Bernard, and I've also got that much faith in Rasul Douglas. Now, Douglas can also bring it. I mean, Douglas had a sack, I believe, last season. He did, from his cornerback spot on a corner blitz. I like our first team coverage guys quite a bit. Mm-hmm. And then you throw in Milano, who can cover, and some other dudes. So yeah, I agree. But you know, I think that one of the things we learned at a young age, right? When we were in geometry at a young age in middle school, we learned the shortest distance between two points was what? A straight line, right?
John Feeney reminds me all the time about the run game.
Yes, exactly. And I really truly believe. And it's just like when you talk about pass rush theory, right? They say that all great pass rushers work off of a great bull rush. Mm-hmm. Okay. And I believe that is true. From playing the position of offensive line, watching guys play, I believe that is true. I also believe that all great teams that really, really brush the passer well, it all starts up the middle. Mm-hmm. And that's another reason why I have faith in this team about getting pressure this season because we talked about Ed Oliver. I think that's a reason why we drafted Dwayne Carter in the third round. Dwayne's another kind of slasher, disruptor kind of guy. Okay.
So he is not an air. He is not a potential replacement at some point for Daquan Jones. He's another Ed.
I mean, he's 6'2", 302. That is big, but he's a squatty body. He's quick. He's agile. He's a slasher type. Gotcha. He's just a little bit bigger weight wise than Ed Oliver. Mm-hmm. Probably has to do a little bit of body comp changing, but I expect him to kind of be the dude that takes a, when Ed comes out for a blow, I think Carter goes in as he gets used to the game.
Gotcha.
I really believe that great pass rush teams brush up the middle. And when you look at this team, you got Daquan that can push the pocket. You got Ed that can get upfield inside. And then you got Bernard that can blitz from the middle. So you've got middle pressure to push those quarterbacks outside and then let your athletes make plays. So I think that I'm probably more optimistic than most. Mm-hmm. And you brought up a great point about Bobby Babbage Jr. I think Bobby Babbage Jr. has a chance to really put a big-time positive stamp on this defense because of that, Joe, bringing new pressure schemes, bringing aggression where maybe we didn't have that in the past.
Right. No, I agree 100% with everything you just said. It's going to be interesting just to see how they roll it and when do they roll it. I don't think it's going to be all day, every day. When you think of some of those aggressive 3-4 schemes where they were just like constant blitzing people, you know, I think of Rex Ryan. I think of just different guys like that did that. It might be more situational, like when to do it and why to do it and how to do it and where to do it. But it'll be interesting to see how it effectively plays. But I think there's great potential there. It's just going to be interesting to see how they build it. Right. I think.
Right. Exactly. And also, too, you still have to play the other side of the equation or the other side of the coin, which is you got to stop the run, too. Right.
Right.
So, you know, how does that whole thing factor in with this group? I think one thing I like about this D-line and I like about this defense, they got some chameleon to them. And when I say that, I mean they can play the run pretty well. They can flip over and be athletic and play the pass also. But as far as just lining up and winning one-on-one matchups at the defensive end position, I think if you're relying totally, if you're playing soft coverage like we used to, okay, if you're playing soft cover two coverage like we used to and relying on outside guys, I think a lot of Ed Von Miller being brought onto this team was because of the Leslie Frazier defense in theory that we need a guy that can win one-on-one.
He can just get home without a blitz.
Right, if he can just get home without a blitz because Leslie was not a guy that, you know, kind of almost uber or even more so than McDermott as far as not taking chances. If you expect us to just line up and win one-on-one matchups at the defensive end spot against these tackles in the NFL, I think you're a little bit mistaken. But I do believe that Von Miller will be back this year. I do believe he will play much, much better. He's got motivation. And that was the other thing about the comments he made the other day, Joe, that I thought were so funny. It was creating mental controversy, right? It was creating mental strife. It was creating an antagonist in his mind.
Right.
Like he's heard all these people say, Vaughn's two steps slow. He can't play anymore. He's not good enough. He's not going to be there. So you, as an athlete, especially later in your career, because you only burn hot for so long, how do I create this narrative in my mind to give me the ultimate motivation I need to go out and play 17 plus games a season?
This is a can of worms because as a fan, you hear the opposite take. If guys at this level need a reason to get excited to play or need a reason to get amped up, if they need bulletin board material, if they need negative voices, blah, 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 blah. Now I'm sitting here with a player going, sometimes you need that antagonist in your mind, right?
But see, the thing is, it's just like anything else. And you know, we, being on both sides of it, I see it differently. I think that a lot of people look at these dudes under that umbrella, right? You're playing football for a living. You should never have to be, you know, come up with a fake narrative to get excited to play.
Right, right.
I work with some of the most talented people in the country, some of them in the world weekly, and orthopedic surgeons.
Right.
And these guys fix things that you're like, how the hell did you do that? Okay.
Right.
I even see them sitting on gurneys with their heads down in the hallway, like, damn, man. Like, you know, having to find the energy, right?
Keep going.
Yeah. Right. When you bring this much stress into something, and this is a highly, there's a lot of cortisol running through people's bodies in that league, right?
Oh, yeah.
And cortisol creates stress. It just tears your body apart. And you have to, it's just human nature, man. The biorhythms are not always peaked.
Right, right. The question I have is sustainability. How long can it sustain him for, right? So how long can him... I'm all for feeding the machine, the mental machine that's going to bring out whatever serotonin, adrenaline, whatever you need to get amped up. You know, I'm for it. I'm there. But how long can it sustain him for? 17 weeks, 18 weeks, 17 games is a long season. And then you've got obviously the playoffs there. And then how long can it sustain him? Vaughn specifically, how long can it sustain him physically? Meaning how long can he sustain mentally? In that moment of being pissed off, like Tom Brady was probably the greatest, controller of his mind in fooling himself into thinking that people think he sucks ever. And it's like, Tom, what are you talking about? You own everybody you play. Nobody's out here saying that you're garbage. And he's like, people think I suck and I got to go out there and show them I don't suck.
It's that's
like,
part of it, man.
Right.
You
right,
have but how to long, create that.
How long can it mentally sustain him? Because he doesn't strike me as a guy that's played that way his whole career. But he strikes me as a guy that's just been better, like Bruce, than everybody else. I'm just better than you, and I'm going to beat you. Now he has to create a narrative in his head. And then how long can he sustain it physically? And does it come into what you – it was either you or John said. I think it might have been John. Literally, maybe it was you. It was one of the two of you said – just bring him in on pass rush situations and keep him off the field on first and second down.
That right? was me. And I think that's imperative of keeping his longevity. But I think the key for Vaughn, and by the way, I watched the best thing about, I've obviously you were like me, you hate Tom Brady if you're a Bills fan,
right?
For all those years of him beating us. Right.
Right.
But if you've watched a lot of Brady's, you know, just candid, raw interviews that he's been doing lately, it's kind of like he's coming clean.
Yep.
One of the things he said last week was, one of my regrets is I took this shit too damn seriously.
Didn't have any fun.
Right. But that's what I'm trying to see. Winning. I don't think people understand that the most successful teams are the most miserable.
Yep. Yep. No, that's
because there's so much stress and pressure about continually winning and doing well, it's really, really hard.
I think there's something to be said too for what you just said is dead on. It's hard. We hear from Coach McDermott all the time. It's coach speak, right? It's hard to win in this league. Josh parrots it as well, but it also comes down to the leadership mentality. And everybody knows that I'm pretty big into leadership as far as that goes. But when you're talking about the reasons that people follow you, there's a positional leader, somebody who's given a position, which is not really a leader. It's more of a manager. Permission leader, which means that I'm giving you permission to lead me right now, which also means I can take that permission away from you. Like whatever has happened, you no longer have permission. There's a productive leader, which means I'm going to follow you because you get shit done, right? So like, I'm going to follow you as long as you're getting stuff done, and I'm going to give you permission to lead me. However, there reaches a point after that where no matter how productive you are, if you're a jerk, if you're an a-hole, if you're hard to get along with, there's a point where the production doesn't matter, especially if you've reached the Super Bowl. Well, we've done this. I've gotten my Super Bowl. Now you're just a jerk. Like, why are you still being a jerk? And I think that's what Tom is probably starting to realize. And Bill Belichick, too. Like, we accomplished all these things, but I made a lot of people mad at me and didn't make a whole lot of friends, right?
Yeah, and I didn't have a lot of fun doing it.
But we reached the highest mountaintops, but I didn't take people with me. Yeah.
Yep. But, hey, but as we wrap this show up today, and we appreciate you coming on and watching today on YouTube as we celebrate our country's wonderful birthday. Just remember, we're celebrating the birth of our country, and the British are working today. So enjoy that, Brits. But anyway, as we look at this pass rush deal, I think our pressure, we're going to have a lot of pressure coming from our linebackers and our secondary. And you talked about what is the key for Vaughn having a great season. I think early season success, first couple of games, he goes out there, whips an offensive tackle with that ghost rush, gets a sack. And I think bygones are bygones. People forget about anything else, and Vaughn is back. So just remember, we'll be back here on the Overreaction Buffalo Sports Network on Sunday night at 8 Eastern, 7 Central. We'll bring you another show. I think the Three Amigos will be back. I think all three of us will be here. Yep. And we'll bring you more great Bills content. Remember, we are now powered by the Believe Network, and we're super excited about that. And, man, thanks for joining us today. And as always, folks, we love you. Thanks for the support. Hit the like button. Hit the subscribe button. Hit the YouTube. The subscription button on YouTube is a big deal for us. So hit that. Tell your friends. And as always, man, one love and go Bills.
Go Bills. Love you guys.